John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, June 13, 2012. At least 12 have been detained in the past 24 hours in the various locations in the West Bank. The details and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Seven Palestinians have been detained on Tuesday in a variety of locations across the West Bank. Residents of the village of Iraq Burin in the Nablus district said that five young Palestinians have been detained, although an Israeli military spokesperson denied the report. The spokesperson, though, did confirm that the three young men had been detained in Balat refugee camp in Nablus, three in Aqbat Jabr refugee camp in Jericho, and one more in Bethlehem. Five activists and one journalist have been arrested on Wednesday at a women's movement walk in the West Bank city of Hebron. Youth Against Settlements reported that two Israelis, three internationals, and one Palestinian journalist who work for Reuters were arrested by Israeli forces during the demonstration. In the meantime, Palestinian football player Mahmoud Sersek, who has been on hunger strike for 90 days, remains in serious condition while Israel refuses to release him. The International Federation of Football Association, FIFA, has released a statement on Tuesday on its website regarding the illegal detention of Palestinian footballers, including Sersek. In addition, a letter has been sent to British Sports Minister Hugh Robertson and Union of European Football Association President Michel Platini, calling for Sersek's release. The FIFA demanded the international football arena to draw the attention of Israeli competent authorities to the present matter, with the aim of ensuring the physical integrity of the concerned players as well as their right for due process. Sersek was detained leaving the Gaza Strip en route to Ramallah in the West Bank to represent the Palestinian national team. In other news, Israeli settlers from the unauthorized outpost of Ulpana hurled stones at an engineering unit of the Israeli army on Wednesday as they arrived to the outpost to finalize the plan to evacuate it in accordance with the Israeli court ruling last month. The EU foreign policy chief Catherine Ashton said on Wednesday that Israeli settlements and the lack of control by Palestinians on most of the sea areas in the West Bank and the increasing settler violence are urgent concerns in the Middle East and seriously threaten the two-state solution. Ashton's remarks came during the European Parliament plenary session in Strasbourg. She called on Israel to refrain from building more settlements in the occupied West Bank. She stated emphatically that the EU would not accept any changes to the 1967 borders, including those relating to Jerusalem, quote, unless both sides agree to them, unquote, arguing that Jerusalem, quote, must be shared between the two nations as part of any two-state agreement, unquote. Local sources reported that the new Palestinian consensus government may be announced next week. Delegates from both Fatah and Hamas are set to meet on June 18th and 19th to finalize the names of the new cabinet members. The new government is expected to consist of 19 ministers and will be headed by the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. That's all from IMEMC News. This was the Wednesday, June 13th, daily roundup news from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, Joe Krishnau.
Afghanistan today. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unspecified nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan yesterday. NATO is reporting the death of two soldiers of unspecified nationality from IED blasts in one or more undisclosed locations in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan Saturday. Four French soldiers were killed by a suicide bombing and five more wounded in Kapisa province, eastern Afghanistan. France now says they intend to withdraw from the war within a month. Afghanistan, Friday. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unspecified nationality from a non-combat related injury in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Is this yet another GI suicide? These have averaged to over one a day among American soldiers since the beginning of this year. Afghanistan, Saturday. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unspecified nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in eastern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Sunday. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unspecified nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Pakistan ongoing. The U.S. has broken off talks aimed at restoring their privilege of using supply routes through the country to NATO troops in Afghanistan. Instead, NATO plans to route all convoys through Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. Afghanistan ongoing. The Taliban is reportedly using a new urban strategy, relying on such tools as GPS and Google Maps to plan assassinations and urban bombings. In response to the deployment of tethered aerostat surveillance balloons, the Taliban's fighters focus on losing themselves in crowds, blending in like fish in the sea in the classic insurgent strategy. Mr. Barack Obama, you cannot win this war that George W. Bush started over 10 years ago. Now is the time to throw in a towel and bring all the troops home today.
As NATO is preparing to exit from the war in Afghanistan, the alliance will move tons of military equipment, such as tanks and artillery, through the Central Asian nations of Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. The Soviet Union used a similar route in withdrawing its forces from Afghanistan in 1988 and 1989. The planned 2014 exit route through Central Asia was prompted by deteriorating relations between Pakistan and the United States. In addition to being embarrassed by the May 2, 2011 U.S. raid into Pakistani territory that killed Osama bin Laden, officials are upset after NATO forces mistakenly killed 24 Pakistani soldiers near the Afghan border. In response, Pakistan has banned the use of its airspace for NATO missions since last November. Since the 9/11 attacks in the U.S., 90% of NATO supplies for the Afghan war have been trucked through Karachi, a route that is now shut down. Because of concern about a volatile power vacuum on its border, China is now making plans to boost its involvement in Afghanistan after NATO troops leave. China wants to prevent the resurgence of separatist Uyghur fighters already rumored to be in Pakistan's tribal areas. Most of China's anticipated aid will go to building infrastructure and training Afghan police and soldiers. The aid will be coordinated by the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a security alliance that includes Russia, China, and several Central Asian nations.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTradio@hushmail.com. The 11th of June is the day anarchists, animal liberation, and Earth Liberation activists remember our prisoners of war, especially those serving long sentences in the enemy's dungeons. This year, activists took direct action in multiple cities in solidarity with activist prisoners. In Seattle, the Street of Dreams office pushing corporate redevelopment and gentrification was redecorated by activists who issued this communique. Last night, the Street of Dreams corporate office located outside of Seattle had its windows etched out and anarchist graffiti painted on it. This was done for June 11th in solidarity with all anarchist prisoners, including Marie Mason and Eric McDavid, in memory of Avalon, and as part of the continual struggle against the destruction of the Earth. In St. Louis, four ATM machines belonging to the big banks were taken out of action. This communique was issued in support of the action. Last night, four ATMs were disabled. Money should be locked away and forgotten, not people. Happy June 11th! In Chicago, anarchists released this communique announcing a set of banner drops. For the June 11th call for solidarity with long-term anarchist prisoners, four banners were dropped in Chicago, not only for Jeremy Hammond, but a few more for the Tinley Park Five. The banners read Free Hammond and Free the Tinley Park Five and were draped over multiple expressway overpasses for all of traffic to see. Total solidarity with these comrades. Free all prisoners and burn every single fucking prison. Two more banners went up in Portland, Oregon, along with this communique. Two banners dropped in Portland in solidarity with PACs and other political prisoners. This was done for all those whose lives are being stolen by the state. Currently making more for when night falls. Happy June 11th. Go out and do something. Attack. Drop banners. Have a demo. No matter how much they try and oppress us, we will never lose our spirit. No matter how many are put in prison, more of us will rise to meet the challenge. Solidarity. Fire to the prisons. In Grand Rapids, Michigan, a benefit fundraiser was held for prisoners Eric McDavid and Marie Mason. There was also a march and block party in Bloomington, Indiana. What began as a street march took over the lawn of the old courthouse building when threatened by the police. Activists hung a banner from a nearby building reading, Free Marie Mason, Free Eric McDavid, Earth First. Now that raises an interesting point. For some reason, the cops and the FBI or obsessed with trying to jail anyone who opposes pollution and animal torture. For well over a decade, most of the home raids and grand jury subpoenas have been aimed at animal and earth liberation activists, while in recent years there have been an increasing number of similar attacks on anti-war activists, anarchists, and organizers of protests against Democratic and Republican conventions. for the past several years, one of the most unsavory participants in Capitol Pride, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender pride, has been Wells Fargo Bank. It has been verified that there is at least one trans woman locked up and being abused in private prisons funded by Wells Fargo, yet Wells Fargo has a nerve to show up at Pride. At about 1 p.m. on Sunday, the 10th of June, protesters confronted Wells Fargo at D.C.'s Capitol Pride Festival. Okay, what happened when a group of protesters went into the Gay Pride Festival after Wells Fargo Bank?
We dressed as pirates, we went in, and we started chanting, Free CC, fuck Wells Fargo.
CC is a trans woman locked up in one of Wells Fargo's private prisons.
Some people jumped on stage, and they ended up pushing people off. We threw streamers, little paper streamers.
What was the reaction?
They weren't sure what was going on, but eventually they called in Pride security and police started coming, and they also had a guy on the truck, very large, well-built, to come out and sort of push people around and, in general, be a thug.
Hmm.
Sort of just moved around their entire tent, bus, or truck, or whatever it was, and just kept chanting and moving around.
Yeah, did you all refer to the GEO group and the private prisons?
Yes.
What did you say about them?
Mainly that they need to stop funding private prisons and Free CC. Donald, I believe her name is.
Who is that?
She's a trans woman who's locked up in one of Wells Fargo's prisons.
So we actually have direct proof of a trans woman being locked in one of Wells Fargo's prisons, and yet Wells Fargo has the nerve to show up at Pride?
Yes. Apparently, on the West Coast, I believe in Seattle, someone threw some sort of incendiary device through one of their windows over it.
Ooh!
I don't have confirmation of this, but I've heard it from several people. So it sounds legit.
And yet they still show up at Pride.
They have a lot of gall. Eventually, after some shoving from the goons and them blasting music at us, being surrounded by cops, someone had gone around to the other side, not sure what they were doing, but the cops ended up arresting him.
Any charges filed?
I'm not sure what the charges were.
Was he released or held?
I think he's been released.
And how long did all this last?
Probably 10 minutes.
In front of over 100,000 people at the Pride Festival.
Yeah, there were a lot of people looking on, wondering what was going on. And we ended up having to walk all through Pride, around Pride, with someone in handcuffs. So people definitely were looking and were curious.
Oh!
I think it did have a good effect.
All right, because I showed up probably around 3:45, and I asked them if they had any statistics for how many GLBT folks were locked up in private prisons run by the GEO group in which they had investments, and they just clammed up and wouldn't say a word. Do you think they'll be back next year?
I doubt it, especially with this guy trying to goad people into starting fights and just the reaction and having massive crowds gathered around the Wells Fargo wondering what's going on.
They've been a major presence at Pride for years. It looks like they're trying to play on all that country western crap to get gay men to open accounts.
It's possible, but I honestly think that they're not going to be allowed back.
Not going to be allowed back?
I'm hoping, with everything that happened, with an arrest and general disruption of Pride.
And we need to make sure that the Pride organizers get the message that these people are locking up GLBT folks, and that might be enough to do the job.
Exactly.
Well, well, well. Wells Fargo shows up at Pride even after C.C. Donalds, a trans woman, is locked in a Wells Fargo's prison, and they have the nerve to think that people at Pride are going to want to open accounts in their crooked bank? I don't think so. Wells Fargo, get the hell out of Pride. I don't want to see your crooked little stagecoach in the parade or in the festival next year. And Pride organizers, I don't care how much money Sugar Daddy Wells Fargo has. It's time to end that bad romance with a crooked bank that is jailing gay, lesbian, bi, and trans folks. On the 13th of June, CEO Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase appeared before Congress to explain the over $2 billion his bank lost gambling on Wall Street like so many games of dice. He got an unexpected surprise as protesters disrupted the hearing and heckled him in person. demanding an end to foreclosures by J.P. Morgan Chase.
Promised me foreclosures for 3 years, and you sold my house from underneath me. Why don't you face the people that you foreclosed for?
Stop! Foreclosures now! Stop!
Foreclosures now! You can get the one that's about $2 million, and you can't give her a modification, Diamond! There's a thing coming!
6 people were arrested in this protest, including Ty Berry of Code Pink and Deborah Harris, a retired D.C. paramedic and EMT who is resisting an attempt by J.P. Morgan Chase to foreclose on her home with help from Occupy D.C. and Occupy Our Homes. It was on her behalf that Occupy Our Homes invaded the mortgage offices of J.P. Morgan Chase on the 4th of June, forcing them to agree to discuss modifying her underwater loan instead of throwing her out in the street. The very next day, the 5th of June, was the very violent eviction of Dawn Butler, a tenant whose landlord was foreclosed on by J.P. Morgan Chase. Under D.C. law, she was supposed to have the right to buy the house, but J.P. Morgan Chase ignored the law. Not only that, the U.S. Marshals were inclined to back off the eviction when they saw Dawn's home barricaded and defended by an estimated 50 Occupy protesters. Instead, J.P. Morgan Chase demanded the marshals evict immediately. This forced a violent confrontation, leaving 3 protesters injured and 1 U.S. Marshal injured by reckless procedures by the rest of his team.
U.S. Marshals have just torn down a blockade made of plastic milk cartons. Underneath that blockade are 2 of the last remaining Occupy D.C. protesters. They have chained themselves to that blockade, and the marshals have just torn down not only the blockade but also the front door. They are surrounded by dozens of angry Occupy D.C. protesters.
Instead of arresting 6 protesters on the 13th of June at the J.P. Morgan Chase hearings, maybe the U.S. Capitol Police should have arrested Jamie Dillon, the CEO of Chase, the moment he stepped through the door for gambling with taxpayers' money.
Fold them, let him hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me.
I love it.
Love game, intuition, play the cards with spades to start.
On the 13th of June, members of Nigeria's Ogoni indigenous nation living in a D.C. area showed up at the Nigerian embassy to demand that the government of Nigeria and Shell Oil clean up the oil that they have been spilling on Ogoni land since before 1960. One of the protest organizers bluntly called Royal Dutch Shell a terrorist organization due to the thousands of Ogoni people who have died from exposure to benzene and other pollutants from the oil.
The Nigerian government and Shell have been in Ogoni exploiting the Ogoni people for, since 1958 when oil was struck in Ogoni. Since then, Ogoni has got nothing from the multi-billion dollars petrodollars that has been taken or extracted from Ogoni. What the Ogoni people has is only a dying environment, a degraded environment that the United Nations Environmental Programs report that came out on August 4th, 2011 confirmed Ogoni people are drinking water that is 900 times higher in benzene than the World Health Organization's standard, even the Nigerian standard.
Wasn't the environment once referred to as being shell-shocked?
Yeah, it has been a shell-shocked land, and it remains a shell-shocked land. The government of Nigeria and Shell are in collaboration. They consciously, deliberately are doing this thing, to kind of exterminate the Ogoni people. Currently, the problem is that the Ogoni people stop Shell and the Nigerian government from taking their oil. You can't continue taking people's wealth for over 35 years and don't give them anything back. And you expect the people to just sit down and say thank you.
And instead, when people don't say thank you, their answer has at least once been hangings.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You might remember that. Ken Sirawiwa and 8 other Ogoni activists were hanged by a military government in 1993 for opposing Shell's exploitation of Ogoni land.
We're trying to let the world know that Ogoni is not at peace. Ogoni wants peace. And one way Ogoni can get peace is if the Nigerian government decides to be a government and not protect a company such as Shell over the Ogoni people. Ogoni people happen to be Nigerians, and Nigeria has the duty, the responsibility to protect the Ogoni people. And so we are doing this to let the world know what's going on in Ogoni, and we need justice. All we're looking for is justice. We're trying to put pressure on the Nigerian embassy to pressure the Nigerian government, because those of us here in America, Ogonis and our friends, we have the responsibility, we have the duty to pressure the Nigerian government, to also pressure, pressure the Nigerian embassy, to pressure the Nigerian government, you know, to clean the Ogoni environment. There's no two ways we can do that. We are trying to, you know, let the world hear us, let the Nigerian government hear us, that it is not only the Ogoni people at home that are crying, but the Ogoni people here in America and their friends, Nigerians and other oppressed Nigerians, are crying, because anything that happened to Ogoni would serve as a kind of model, especially in environmental cleanup.
This is rather like what's going on with the Lakota people here in North America with the tar sands mining in Alberta, Canada, and the Keystone XL pipeline. Same stuff. Shell's actually worse than BP, but because they commit their crimes in Africa, a lot of people don't care.
Definitely so. And I mean, the most common of the issue is that the Nigerian government is allowing Shell to do that. Take, for instance, BP in America, the issue that just happened.
The big spill.
The big spill. The American government, because it chooses to be a government, decide to hold BP accountable. But in Nigeria, that's not the case.
Yeah, what I'm guessing is that Shell takes all the garbage and the crap they wouldn't dare use in Alaska and takes it down to Nigeria to use.
They do all kinds of things. Shell is a quasi-government in Nigeria. Shell is one of the most deadliest companies in the world that you can ever think of. Shell is, I mean, I have declared Shell a terrorist organization.
It's appropriate.
It's
like combining Blackwater with Exxon.
Shell fits that description of a terrorist organization, because when you terrorize the environment is man's first right. If you don't live in an environment that is secure, that is safe, you cannot live, you cannot even breathe to claim other rights, be they political, social, or economic. And so Shell is a terrorist organization, so long as I and the Ogoni people are concerned.
And aren't there supposed to be procedures for cutting off money and assets to terrorist organizations?
Well, that is what we should have done. But you know what's going on in the world today, where oil is important to the government. Governments around the world are so concerned about, you know,
Under the same rules applied to Al Qaeda, there should be an embargo on all oil from Shell.
Definitely. And that's why we boycott Shell. We've been asking people to join us and boycott Shell.
I haven't bought Shell gas since 1993 after the hangings.
And that's a great thing. Thank you very much for doing that.
After about an hour and a half of the protest, several representatives of the Nigerian embassy emerged, making many promises about how the government would indeed start cleaning up the mess they and Shell made together 10 months after a UN report on the situation.
I'm going to do that. This message will get to the highest level.
Expeditiously.
It will be there. And then let me also reiterate that we are on the same side. The Ogoni people are Nigerian people.
Definitely.
Here we represent Nigeria. We don't represent any individual ethnic group. And the overall well-being of all Nigerians is the overall objective of President Goodluck Jonathan. And he will stop nowhere but to see that he gets the best for the Nigerian people, including the Ogoni people. And we are very delighted, and we share the same view with you. And I'm very glad you also mentioned that Nigeria and Shell team up to see that this clean up will take place. It will take place. Don't mind the challenges. The challenges you see, the delays, are the same challenges most developing countries face. We are faced with so many challenges, as you know, in Nigeria. Security challenges, developmental challenges, and all that. But we are not by any means shaky in our responsibility as a government, as a people, to deal decisively with the problem.
A whole lot more words than that were spoken, all bearing the same promises. Government of Nigeria, the Ogoni people are going to hold you to these promises. To everyone else out there, if you don't believe in stealing oil, not cleaning up spills dating back as far as 1970, and hanging anyone who complains something Shell has never apologized for, there's something you can do about it. Boycott Shell, don't buy a single drop of their blood gasoline.
We'll be repenting time.
and stab in the back with clown fat. So we get fat with the beat, not with the meat. And we fight right back with fat funk against this fast food junk. A propaganda pumping punks calling it food. I think they're confused. A killer sweet treat to see, let loose a few. For a fast food attitude, mad cow, cash cop mentality. Growing instant gratification, sowing seeds of slavery. It's happened up the pace of the lab rat race. The Soma Coma Kamikaze selling pig fat as milkshakes. Border slaughter trauma, sick cows line mass graves. Serve you up a dead planet on the skin bones of slaves. Serve you up a dead planet on the skin bones of slaves.
Mass production, mass society. Everything the same, junk food, crap jobs.
The high fat intake, the high animal protein intake, the lack of these other things lead into the kind of diseases that actually kill 3/4 of us in Western society before our time.
Yeah, this Ronnie Mac heart attack packed is manufacturing, distracting plastic package, false facts, hormone pump, disease, dumb cow pus and clown fat. Yum. Got truth trembling on the corporate water torture rack. Would you like lies with that? Or fries with beef fat? What about terrified cries of forests falling for Big Mac? Genetically modified alibis for the starving poor. Third world food stolen for Mac, first world exports. Straight to your first world, first class, neoliberal sat on a fat ass. Free market disaster task, I gotta ask. How much land did you steal for that happy meal? Yeah, it's a crap. Happy deal when you see the lives it killed.
Third world debt.
Yeah, it's a crappy deal when you see the lives it killed.
These are the most important issues I think that any of us have to face living our ordinary lives.
Just destroying rainforests.
Without advertising, McDonald's wouldn't exist. It's all image. And, you know, if you can get behind that and expose the reality of the corporation, then, you know, there's nothing left.
Just destroying rainforests.
Fried lies for another colonized genocide attempt. Fat corporate cats hell bent on monoculture, madness and mayhem to rupture the structure of diversity. It's heresy, embarrasses me, the golden arch glory of modern humanity. The greasy greed feast of fearful disease meat, turning animals into cannibals and humans into sheep. You're being cloned like robots in a war machine factory, cause they're harvesting lies like they be harvesting wheat. Overworked employer, exploited, underpaid. The youth of today being waylaid into early graves. By fat corporate cats, deep fried desires, hellfires and death fires upside. Dissolving, remolding their lives in animal fat. It's a cannibal act, a criminal fact. The capital pact is stabbing you in the back. Yeah, deep fried in animal fat. It's a cannibal act. The capital pact is stabbing you in the back with a criminal fact. Golden arch, idealistic, satanic earth demolition religion. Your monoculture style is genocide. Full scale culture assaulter like a Christian mission. Your mindshare warfare is totalitarian tunnel vision. Your mindshare warfare is totalitarian tunnel vision. It's mindfucker, tucker, terrorism.
Mindfucker, terrorism.
Research shows that the golden arches are now more recognized than the Christian cross.
Yeah, I ain't bowing down to no pedophile clown. No raping the minds of children, turning smiles to frowns. So we shouting out loud with our stereo sound. Bring the whole fat evil Mac empire down.
McDonald's. The financial hub of billionaires Charles and David Koch's empire of right-wing political organizations is the Center to Protect Patient Rights, which is run from a post office box north of Phoenix, Arizona. Very little is known about the internal operations of the center, since the donor list is secret and its staff refuses to talk to the media. During the 2010 election, the center distributed $55 million to 26 pro-Republican groups, such as the America Future Fund, 60 Plus, and Americans for Job Security. The money was principally used to attack Democrats in the run-up to the off-election year. According to the Los Angeles Times, the money was used for direct mail in California, robocalls in Florida, and a $2 million attack ad campaign in Iowa. The Center for Responsive Politics reports that during the 2010 election campaign, outside groups mostly backing Republican causes spent $304 million. Campaign finance experts believe the Center to Protect Patient Rights acts as a pass-through group to collect and distribute right-wing money while hiding the identity of the donors. The center funded campaigns to derail President Obama's health care reform legislation, including a ballot initiative run by the U.S. Health Freedom Foundation. It also bankrolled other right-wing groups like the anti-abortion Susan B. Anthony List and Grover Norquist's Americans for Tax Reform.
On April 23rd, 74 disability rights activists were arrested in the Cannon House office building in Washington, D.C., there to protest the Republican-led House of Representatives' proposed plan to cut $800 billion from the federal Medicaid budget. The protest was part of the disability rights group ADAPT's My Medicaid Matters campaign. The acronym ADAPT used to stand for American Disabled for Accessible Public Transportation, but with the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act in the early 1990s, that battle was largely won. ADAPT now stands for American Disabled for Attendant Programs Today, emphasizing the need for personal care assistance to help disabled citizens to remain in their homes and not be institutionalized. Actor Noah Weil, a star of the Falling Skies TV program, was among the ADAPT activists to be arrested at the April protest. ADAPT says that like Americans of the past, disability activists are practicing nonviolent civil disobedience to prevent the nation from stepping backward toward oppression and segregation. Elaine Kolb was one of those arrested in the April protest. She uses a wheelchair as a result of a stabbing injury many years ago. This was her 19th arrest since joining ADAPT in 1987. She is also a singer-songwriter whose work focuses on disability rights issues. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhu spoke with Kolb, who explains why she participated in this latest protest as she considers what the future may hold for Americans with disabilities.
The real focus was on the fact that the Republican budget that they've come up with would absolutely destroy Medicaid, Medicare, and a lot of the services that people, all different kinds of people, but especially people with disabilities, require. This is a pretty big deal, because without Medicaid, most people with disabilities, low-income people with disabilities, will not survive. People will die. It's very simple.
The House Republicans are putting forward many bills they know will never make it into law. How much was your demonstration an organizing tactic, and how much do you really fear you'll lose these services?
It's already happening. You see, what most people don't understand is that Medicaid is a buy-in system. There's 50 different Medicaids in this country, because each state gets to decide how much of the federal program they will buy into. It's matching fund. So everybody has a different formula. Some states are, you know, a whole lot better than other states. So like some states provide dental care, some states don't provide any dental care. Now theoretically, Medicaid provides dental care in this state, but it's almost impossible to find a dentist who will take it.
Right.
So even if you qualify, which is not so easy to do, by the way, then it doesn't mean you're going to get good care. So people are barely surviving. And all of the cutbacks haven't even gone into effect, the ones that have already been set up in all the different states around the country. So in some areas, for example, whole clinics have been closed. Rehabilitation clinics are for people with disabilities. But think of the safety net, okay? And what's happening all over the country is that they're cutting strands of the safety net. And the people that will fall through first, that are already falling through one by one, but it's by the hundreds and the thousands. And if the Republican budget goes through, it will be the millions.
Elaine Kolb, that raises a question. How many people with disabilities are there in the U.S.?
Well, it depends on who cuts the cards, but they say something around 58 million people. And it's a growing percentage. So this is where it gets really, really terrifying.
Why is it terrifying?
Nursing home care is mandatory. States have to provide nursing home care. Services in the community, home care, personal assistance services, the stuff that we're promoting, that's optional. And so when the states are trying to balance their budgets, where do you think they make the cuts? Well, yes, they limit or cut back on home care services or respite care.
I imagine over the past 10 years, a much greater proportion of people with disabilities in this country are veterans.
Absolutely. But once again, it's the whole system is so disjointed, and a lot of disabled veterans end up spending years trying to get services because they haven't been officially designated as having a disability. You know, there are still people that are dealing with Agent Orange, for example, from the Vietnam War, that were never officially considered to be disabled, so they didn't qualify for services. And of course, now what's happening is the very high percentage of soldiers who are coming back that have very severe post-traumatic stress syndrome and chronic head injuries. And well, it's the same thing here in this country, but a lot of the people that have those similar sorts of injuries or disabilities are because of the horrible crime and violence in this country, in our homes and on the street.
Does the disability rights movement make common cause with other groups, especially other groups promoting health-related reforms?
Yes, we try to build coalitions, but unfortunately, it seems most organizations, even if they're considered progressive organizations, are still themselves caught in the old charity approach to disability and really have not recognized that this is a civil rights issue.
That was Elaine Kolb with the disability rights group ADAPT. Find more information on the disability rights movement by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.